morning. If you all want to start turning to Matthew chapter 1, you can do that a while. I'll go through a little bit of an introduction, but we're going to start there. Where did you all come from? It can be interesting to look into your genealogy. And I think once you turn there to Matthew chapter 1, you'll see why we're talking about that, because you'll see that's the genealogy of Christ. Some of you may know your ancestors. Some of you may even have famous ancestors, men who maybe fought in the Civil War or been important political figures in the past. You may have famous people in your history. But I personally don't know much about my ancestors at all. On the Brumette side of the family, I don't know anything beyond my grandfather. In fact, I didn't even know him. I just know of him from my dad. He died in prison of tuberculosis when my dad was just a kid. So I really don't know anything beyond my grandfather. Or I didn't really even know him, but I know of him. So I don't know where I came from or where my family came from. Sometimes people ask me about my last name, Brumette. Where did that originate? Where did Brumette come from? I usually just shrug my shoulder and say, America, I guess. I don't know where it came from. So I really don't know where I originate from. Some people say it sounds French, but I always kind of hoped it wasn't French, but I'm not sure. My dad said it was English. I'm not sure if he knew or not, but he said it was an English name. It was something about people living on a hill with broom bushes that came from England, but I'm not sure. I don't know if he was sure either. He did not have much luck finding his ancestors either. He actually tried for a while to look into his family tree, but he couldn't find anything beyond his immediate family. So apparently our family didn't keep many records. I'm not sure why. Maybe they didn't want to leave any evidence behind, I'm not sure, but that's one theory. So I don't know really where I came from, but genealogy, as I said, can be very interesting. I know a lot of you know about your genealogy and have looked into it, if you have access to that information. The genealogy of Christ is well documented, though, in Matthew chapter 1, as I mentioned, if you're already there. You can read over the entire genealogy there in Matthew chapter 1. It's a long list of people's names, and there's all sorts of famous people in his ancestry, people like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, King David, King Solomon, and other names that we recognize. And these are just a few of the names that we can expect to find in the ancestry of the King of Kings, of Christ. You expect to find famous, well-known, faithful men like those. But there are other names in there as well that you may not expect to find. If you look in Matthew 1 verse 5, there's one of those names that you may not expect to know, but probably most of you already know it's there. Matthew 1 verse 5, it says, Salmon begat Boaz by Rahab, Boaz begot Obed by Ruth, and Obed begot Jesse. So we see the name of Rahab in here. And we know the story of Rahab from the book of Joshua, that she was a harlot. And she was not somebody who would be really renowned or famous or what you'd consider a pillar of a person in history. But she's in here in the genealogy. It's someone you would not expect to see here. If you want to turn over now to Hebrews 11, you know Hebrews 11 is the faith chapter. And we see she's also listed there in verse 31. Hebrews 11, verse 31. It says, By faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. So God does not always call the high in society, the most educated, or the most popular to do his work, or even to be in the lineage of his son. In fact, most times it seems like it's just the opposite. And that's what we see here with Rahab. So now I do want to go back to Joshua. And we'll probably stay in the back in the book of Joshua now in chapter 2. So if you want to turn back to Joshua chapter 2, I want to pick up the story of Rahab and what happened back there and maybe learn a few lessons that we can use today from that story. If you want to turn back to Joshua chapter 2, I'll set the stage a little bit. All of you know this story pretty well, but I'll just go over it here quickly. Joshua and the Israelites were at the border of the land that God had promised them. For 40 years they had been wandering around in the desert. And God finally was going to give them what he had promised. But of course, there was the city of Jericho that stood between them and the land. So Joshua sent over two spies over the river to check out the city and report back to him. And we are told in verse 1 of chapter 2 that the spies went to stay at the house of Rahab, the prostitute. And she hid the spies under large stalks of flax on the roof of her house from the men of the king of Jericho. The king of Jericho found out they were there, and he sent men out to find them, but she hid them on the roof. And then And then she sent the king's men away, telling them that she didn't know where the spies had gone. Spies had found a friend and an ally in Rahab when she protected them and hid them from the king. But what is it that made her take that incredible risk? It was certainly an incredible risk what she did. I mean, it was pretty risky to go against the king of the city you lived in and hide these men when he sent their soldiers out to look for them. What made Rahab betray her people and risk everything by risk being caught by the king's men and being arrested? Well, if you want to look in Joshua chapter 2, I'm going to read verses 9 to 11, and we'll get some insight into what really was in her mind or what made her do this. Verse 9. And she said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen over us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and when you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and earth below. It says that Rahab could see the writing on the wall, I guess you could say. She knew that her city was going to be destroyed. And apparently everyone else in the city knew it too. Because it says they melted in fear of what the Israelites had already done to these other cities. They were afraid. They knew that they were destined for destruction. And Rahab had no doubt that God was the king of the Israelites. She said, I know that God is leading you, that he is your God. She said that she knew that God had given them this land, and she also knew that it was destined for destruction. She says that the Lord your God is given, the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. She had no doubt that God was going to deliver his people and to give them this promised land, and that her world that she lived in was destined for destruction. I think you can draw a comparison there too, that our world is destined for destruction as well. And God is going to deliver his people again to a promised land, to his kingdom on this earth. This world is temporary, just like Rahab's world in Jericho was temporary. And of course, we know that we need to recognize that this world is going to be destined for destruction. We have a very short time before the kingdom of God does return or come to this earth. Rahab realized that it was going to be destroyed, that her world was on the way out, and a new world was coming. And she made the decision that she was going to side with God. And that's a lesson for us. Just a few people from that whole city of Jericho survived the attack. Most everyone was destroyed. When Jericho was destroyed, probably lots of nice people died. Probably lots of rich people died. Well-educated people died. Many religious people died. Many successful people died. Many well-meaning, friendly, what you might call good people probably died. Just like what will happen when Christ returns to this world. Prophecy tells us that not many will survive then either. But there will be a lot of destruction. So where is your allegiance? Are you attached to this world that we can see around us that is destined for destruction? Or do you want to be part of God's kingdom, God's coming kingdom? Obviously, we want to be part of God's coming kingdom. So just like Rahab, we need to be aware of the coming destruction around us. But we need to do more than just be aware of it. There has to be something else. And the story of Rahab teaches that to us as well in verses 4 through 7. We need to have faith to act on the knowledge that we have. Rahab knew, she said she knew, that her world was going to be destroyed. And she knew that God was going to deliver that land to the Israelites. But she did more than just know it. She acted upon it. Joshua 2, verse 4. But the woman who had taken the two men and hidden them, she said, yes, the men came to me, but I do not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, the men left. I do not know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You can maybe catch up with them. But she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax that she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of Jordan. And as soon as the pursuers had gone, the gate was shut. So as we read early in verse 9, everybody in the country could see what was coming. It says that they melted in fear. Everyone melted in fear over what was going to happen. But in the end, only Rahab had the faith to do something about it. And of all the people in Jericho, Rahab was the only one who did anything. The others knew it was coming as well. Everyone was aware. But Rahab had the faith. But she did not just have the faith. She also took action according to her faith. If you want to turn to James chapter 2. Maybe you don't want to turn there, I'll read it. It's James chapter 2, verse 25. James chapter 2, verse 25. Just a short verse. It says, in the same way, was not even Rahab the prostitute considered righteous for what she did? So she was considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction. So here in James, it just reiterates the fact that Rahab had more than just faith. Rahab did something. She was considered righteous for what she did. So she didn't just believe, she acted on that belief and was considered righteous for what she did. So Rahab saw what was coming and believed and had faith in God and showed her faith by what she did, putting her neck on the line. She, you know, actually endangered her own life, obviously, in an act of faith. But in the end, Rahab was not saved from destruction by what she did or by just her faith. She was saved because of the mercy of the Israelites. Let's look down at verse 12 now, Joshua 2, verse 12. And then please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family. This is Rahab talking to the two spies after she had hid them. Now then, please swear to me, the Lord, that you will show me kindness to my family because I have known kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and my mother and my brothers and sisters and all who belong to them, that they will save us from death. So she's asked the Israelites at the time to spare her and her family from the coming destruction. If you remember, she had a red rope that she let down out of her window as a marker, so she knew. And then Joshua told his men when they attacked not to hurt anybody in that building or in that home. So this is a lesson for us as well. We are not saved by our deeds either. She was not saved because of what she did. She was saved by God's mercy and the mercy of the Israelites at the time. And that's the same with us. We're not saved by our deeds. We're not saved by our faith. We are only saved because of God's mercy and because of the sacrifice of his son, Christ, in our stead. Rahab and her family didn't save themselves. They didn't need to fight their way out of Jericho with swords when the Israelites came in. Instead, she had faith. She acted on that faith, and then she was spared. Just like we are rescued by Christ's sacrifice now. So in conclusion, God's kingdom is coming. We can see the signs around us every day. I mean, I know that we talk to each other all the time and talk about this, how it seems like it's getting closer and closer. You see the signs every day of the coming of what we think to be the end of this world and the destruction of this world and the coming of his kingdom. We see the signs every day. We can recognize the coming destruction of this world, just like Rahab recognized the coming destruction of her world. If you want to be part of that kingdom and not be destroyed, then just like Rahab, we need to have the faith that God is in control, that there is a God out there who is in control, and then act upon that faith and do what he tells us to do. If we do this, then we will have the confidence that, like Rahab, that through God's mercy, we will be rescued as well. I want to turn one more verse in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. It's a verse that we know pretty well. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God. And why are we all these things? Well, it answers that in the second part of this verse. That you may declare the praises of him who called you out of the darkness and into his wonderful light. So he has chosen us. He says we are a chosen people, and we are chosen for a purpose. Just like he chose Rahab for a purpose. And he wants us, and he wants to make something out of us. Even if we are a bunch of nobodies, like I've mentioned before. We are all nobodies at one time until God calls us for a higher purpose. We may not be the most educated. Certainly I know I'm not the most educated. We may not be the wealthiest people. We may not be the smartest people in the world. But yet God has chosen us to fulfill a purpose, just like he chose Rahab. Someone who you may not think would fit the persona of someone that God would choose for that purpose. But he chose her. And he has a promised land in store for us as well. We just need to have the kind of faith that Rahab did. And then the courage to act upon that faith that Rahab did as well. No matter how difficult the circumstances that we find ourselves in. I think it's safe to say when you look around this room, and when we all look around this room at each other, that we can see that type of faith. Or none of us would be sitting here today. All of us have that type of faith. And we feel the same way that Rahab did. That God is in control, and we have faith in him. That's why we're here. We just need to remember to keep that faith and to keep on going forward, no matter how difficult it may become. The story of Rahab can be an encouragement as we go forward, and it can teach us to keep that faith no matter how difficult the circumstances. The good news is that even a pagan prostitute that lived on top of a wall in Jericho can be called faithful along with all the other great men in Hebrews 11. And there is probably still hope for us as well.